Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I am deeply grateful you could be with me for this October 22nd podcast. And we're going to talk a little bit about intent. What does the word intent mean? And what should be our intention when we're thinking about being in an authentic spiritual practice? And this is something that I got from Carol in Los Angeles. She sent me an email regarding her intent and all of that, and we're going to talk about that in a moment. But I want to help you understand my premise on intent. Intent, the word means purpose, something you're doing to show your authentic purpose or your resolved determination to do something. That's according to the dictionary. I always like to look up words in the dictionary because, you know, we assume we understand these words, but sometimes they take on a meaning that is totally different than what we assume is the meaning. So that's always why I do that. So what is a person's intent? What do they want to accomplish? And even should there be an intent in an authentic spiritual practice? I'm going to tell you a story at the end of this podcast that might clarify some things. So let's get right into it. This is from Carol in Los Angeles. My intent is to be happy. Does a spiritual practice that you teach make it possible for me to be happy? Well, I don't know what you mean by happy. Now, happy can be interpreted in numerous ways. And this kind of happy that we're talking about here with you, Carol, is an emotional happiness. And that is not what the work is all about, inner work. The inner work is really about finding that which is from that which is not. And I'm going to keep it that simple. Happiness is a quality of consciousness, not something that we emotionally get involved in and start living from in order to gratify our body and our emotions. If you really look at it, most of our life is spent trying to gratify our emotions in some way or another, because otherwise they just keep impulsing us with memories and thoughts that they had about their existence, maybe something that happened to you. We're always trying to compensate for our pain. And what we don't seem to understand is that our pain deep inside that we just refuse to acknowledge or refuse to understand exists is there because of some memory or some assumed belief that we have of our inability to cope with something that maybe just doesn't bring us much joy or pleasure, as it were. So we're always dealing with our emotions pounding us. I've got to be a success. I've got to show them I'm better than, or that I'm not what they think I am, or maybe I've got to get this whatever to make me feel good again about myself or about another person. I have to know somehow that there is a pony down here somewhere. And we just keep going on and on and on, living our life, trying to avert or trying to outrun our pain and our sorrow. And we don't look at the source of our pain and sorrow, which is the very source of our happiness. It is the human heart. Your human heart, Carol, is not your friend, and it will never be what you think it to be. You will never really satisfy it, and when it does get satisfied, then it wants more and more and more. I was watching football the other day, and they had a player who was in the Super Bowl, and he was going to retire. And in that retirement, he started to think about the adoration he was getting at the Super Bowl for winning it. He was, as he said, hooked on the graffiti and the adoration that was going on at the time. The graffiti was being written, he said, through the news. I think it's interesting he used the word graffiti. Anyway, he got cooked inside. He said it's the highest high he's ever had to watch people adorate the team and him especially. And so he wants another Super Bowl ring. And so you start to look at it. One isn't enough, and two might be better, and three would be superb, and everybody wants to be the Tom Brady guy with all the rings. So you start to realize what is happy. Now, in a spiritual practice, an authentic one, we put aside the common idea of happy. The pedestrian mentality thinks of happy as something that you are when your emotions are lined up with all sorts of feelings of accomplishment, or a feeling that other people love you, or that you are needed, or you're essential. That's the way it lines up inside of us. And that in itself is pretty dubious, to say the least. To get everybody on the page of you, which is what self-righteousness is all about, is something that people long for, and they look at and they think, this is what would make me happy. So, Carol, in an authentic spiritual practice, these highs and lows and these desires for some sort of adoration, gratification, are reduced, not done away with, but reduced. And when a person is no longer at the mercilessness of their emotions, then they enter into a new phase of their living, a place where they can go and become a no-thing, a nothing, and hence do not have to worry about what their impulse to believe about themselves from the human heart, that they are a failure if they are not happy, or they're a failure if other people don't make them happy, or blah, 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 something like that. We learn not to depend upon others for any kind of adoration of ourselves. So if you start to look at the way of the heart, the real heart, the authentic heart, you start to understand it is the simple things that bring about beauty. There is an old story that I've loved about a man who went to Japan to try to understand the nature of Zen, the nature of spiritual awakening. And he went through all sorts of difficulties and arduousness. And in the whole thing, he failed miserably. He just couldn't do it. He was of the West, and we in the West propagate the whole idea of getting what we want and being successful and having desires, and ambition and pride are very big, and he just couldn't overcome it. So he was going to leave the monastery because he just failed miserably. And he watched this humble monk raking leaves in the fall, and it was late in the afternoon, and the monk was lighting the leaves to burn them, and he was standing there raking them into the little fire that he had made. And the man walked over to the monk and said, "Tell me, please, what is your intent for the arduousness of your practice?" And the monk looked at him and said, to become this smoke that was coming up, obviously, from the leaves. That said it all. And the man went back and accomplished his oneness and became very proficient in Zen, in meditation. He had found a new happiness. This happiness was, again, the quality of consciousness and not something that was derived out of something pleasurable in his life, something gratifying in his living. He had found his intent. And that is the intent. To understand this intent, you must be very, very sincere. Carol, I don't know you. You write me often, and I am grateful for all of your emails, but I don't know what your intent is. I don't know what your sincerity is. You seem, like so many, to want to see what you would get for your effort, and that intent would not be a quality intent, a totality. You have to put your whole totality in spiritual work. You just can't just say, well, I'm going to try it and see what's going to happen, which is what most people do. We miss the whole effort of what it is to awaken spiritually. And we don't even know what that spirituality really is. We just don't get it. So we only can assume a spirituality. Your intent must be total and complete. It must be to live in the way, in a sense of totality, without any reservation on your part. Now, most people just can't do that. They have too many complications in their life, too many people in their life. They're married, they have children, they have responsibilities, things like that, and they don't know how to assess the meaning of becoming the smoke, of just turning away from everything that is futile and causes us karma to come back into this life again and again through, you know, birth and death. To get the overall picture of this, a person has to understand the futility of their life and do the difficult, as Lhotse said, before it becomes impossible. And in all of that, that is when significance, gravitas, begins to emerge in us, and we start to realize all of this stuff, this glitter and glamour that I want, all of this ease and comfort, easy peasy kind of mentality that I want is not doing me any good at all, because I keep staying the same person who wants more and more and more, and I can't seem to find the more. There comes an end to the more. Even the richest people in the world are bored because they have everything, and there is nothing more for them to have but what they do have. It's all a matter of what lives within us. You'd really have to work on yourself. What replaces our happiness in the practice is forgiveness, mercy, generosity. These are things that replace this selfish pride and vanity of wanting to be happy. Now, if you're not willing to give up what you call happy, then you will never awaken, not in this world, and you are not fit for an authentic spiritual practice at all. That doesn't mean you don't find great joy in it. I find great joy in my practice, and I find my sense of humor changing and moving around, and I learned how to laugh at the absurdities of Gregory. So when you're really into this, you start to realize that your values need to change. Everything will change, and you will find the true significance of what it means to be the smoke. I'm out of here. I hope that helps you. I really do. And I hope that in some way my words were transcended by my intent. Thank you for listening, Carol, and thank you all for listening, and please forgive me, eh? Namaste.